Like video games? So do we. Go check out The Final Score at finalscoreshow.com or search for Final Score on iTunes. Join Brian, Nicole, and Scott every week.
Ready for dust off. In the pipe. 5x5.
Carrier has arrived.
Ready to plunder.
Ladies and gentlemen, fire up your SCVs. This is The Creep.
You've got The Creep.
With Scott Johnson and Brian Huff.
Hey everybody, welcome back to The Creep. This is episode 4 of The Creep. I'm Scott Johnson.
And I'm Brian Huff.
And welcome back, everybody, after a bit of a hiatus.
But that's all my fault.
Dude, it's real life stuff. It's stuff you can't get around. You had to move your family, that is to say your wife and dogs, and now I understand cats.
Yeah, you know.
Across the country, right?
Yep, from Ohio.
Oh my gosh, dude. All the way to Seattle. Sweet Seattle. Yeah, that's crazy.
And you're we did drive by. I thought about stopping.
Oh yeah, you could come by. That'd be fine. Do lunch. Talk about the future of creepy things.
Exactly. Well, but, you know, StarCraft is serious business, so we need to get back.
Yeah, absolutely. StarCraft is back, and so are we. We're thrilled to be here, folks. Thanks so much for being so patient. While Brian gets settled, life will return to normal, and we will be back on our regular schedule, that is to say weekly with The Creep. Thanks for all your great feedback in the meantime. Normally, we jump right into a map at this stage, but I thought it might be fun as we work around the world of StarCraft today to talk about some of the stuff that happened recently. There was an article posted just before, or just, I want to say just after our last episode.
That would be right.
And it talks about balance, and it talks about some of the issues dealing with balance and Zerg specifically. And some of this I thought was kind of interesting. They talk about how the 1.1 patch began to sort of address some of the balance issues with StarCraft. But the changes seem kind of small, mostly build times, you know, how long it takes to get the zealot out, how long the gateways take to warp something in, that kind of stuff. But the community seems convinced that StarCraft II isn't quite balanced yet. We're hearing that from a lot of people. In particular, there's a sense that the Zerg continue to be very unpowered as compared to both Protoss and Terran being the biggest offender in most people's minds.
Well, you've got a lot of things at work here. I mean, first off, the Terran are going to be played the most because they are the first campaign and people have the most experience with them. They've had a chance to screw with all the new units like that. That makes a lot of sense. The second thing is Zerg, and they talk about this. There's fewer Zerg players overall. So you're going to have people that when you only have fewer players playing Zerg, there's going to be fewer in the top. Because I think the thing that sparked this was the top 200 players, there's very few Zerg players, so that's what everyone got upset about. But and they cited a lot of things. I mean, larva management for Zerg is a lot more complicated than the building that you have to do with Protoss and Terran, so I could see why that would be a huge barrier to entry for Zerg players.
Sure. Well, I mean, the issue is certainly, and they're admitting, Blizzard's, it's, you know, saying we have less Zerg players in the game or that are actively playing Zerg. And maybe there's some things about Zerg that are intimidating. It's not the, you know, well, with Terran, it's like, I got airplanes and dudes and, you know, helicopter looking stuff, and this is all stuff I can relate to, right? All I gotta do is watch like a James Cameron movie and half that stuff's in here. And that's great. That's the Terrans, is, you know, it's a very accessible race, and it's you know, makes sense that it was the first of the games. And we'll talk more about this whole three game thing here in a minute, because there's some other interesting news in that regard. But I can see why Terrans are immediately adopted by a lot of players, and I can see why Protoss are probably second in that line, because again, there's things that are kind of familiar to us. It's like, all right, well, these guys are, you know, basically the aliens, but it's like Klingons. I got ships too, and I need to blow stuff up at those ships, and everything kind of makes sense. With Zerg, you're kind of throwing all that out the window and saying, all right, you know, you get 2-for-1 for Zerglings. Well, what does that mean? Well, it means that Zerglings are hamburger and don't last very long. So chances are you're going to need to make a whole bunch more of them. And oh, guess what? Your workers, unlike the other two sets of workers, they get sacrificed the minute you build a building with them. And you got to remember to keep replenishing your worker force and this kind of stuff. It's a very, very different and I think a lot more apprehensive experience for players who aren't used to it.
Yeah, there's just a lot more to take into account. I mean, you're talking about units that when you upgrade them, they actually change. I mean, you lose Zerglings to go to Banelings, things like that. It can be intimidating, and it's a big learning curve. It's a long, you know, there's a long lifespan for this game. We're talking about, what, 12 years for the original one?
Yeah.
It's going to take people time to use this, and I think when Heart of the Swarm comes out, you're going to see a lot more Zerg players because they're going to be able to mess around with it in the campaign, really learn more about how to play a Zerg, and I think that will make the population go up.
I have no doubt that you're right, but I'm gonna play devil's advocate for a second. So picture me in a little red suit with like horns and a tail.
I don't feel comfortable with that.
Oh, I was gonna say I do that every time I record.
Well, that would have been even creepier.
I'm going to ask you the question that may be a little bit hard to answer, and that is this. Okay, sure, we can throw things to the wind and say, think of this game as a 12-year life cycle, and during that time, balancing and stuff will occur. And think of it as a game that has a brand new expansion coming that is all Zerg-focused, and that's going to help players. What do you say to players who are Zerg enthusiasts? I'm one of them. I really enjoy the Zerg. I like all those weird things. What do you tell us when we still believe that the race on the whole is underpowered and the game is here, right here, and now? You know, how do you placate me until those times come? And I don't want to wait 12 years, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Well, if you go through like the Liquid forums and read, there's a lot of threads about people. It's about not taking the time. It takes longer time to figure Zerg out. And a lot of people are saying they're having good success, but it's taking a lot of trial and error. There's not clear cut path. So I'd say that you are probably right. They are more difficult to play and thus they seem a little underpowered. But I think there's people out there doing cool things with Zerg and just going to take a little bit more research and a little bit more play time to get the Zerg player up to the level that they're claiming that the Terran and the Protoss players are at.
Yeah, I think that is all true, and I'm excited for whatever's coming, but it's interesting what they say here. So as you can go read on the forums at any one time, and there are a bunch of different theories about balance and imbalance. We're very cautious about making large swinging changes, his words, not mine, right now, because the highest level things are actually very strong. The things we'll probably be addressing in 2v2 are in the 2v2 larger scale games. Ultimately, the 1-to-1 is what we want to keep as sacred as possible. Interesting terminology. But as a result, right now, there are some things that we will need to address in the 2v2 higher level. We'll be looking at ways to do that without affecting the 1v1 balance, unquote. So that's an interesting perspective that I hadn't thought of, because the game is at its purest form 1v1, because there's your unit for unit matchup, right?
Right.
There's your rock, paper, scissors experiment every time you play. But when you throw in more dudes and you say, all right, well, two Zerg versus one Protoss and one Terran, that's a totally different world. In essence, that's two new races 1v1. Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, those two things combined are like trying to make a game again. Like, you're trying to say, all right, well, those two combined, let's call it the... let's see. If you had two Zerg, let's call it the Zergs. And on the other one, you got the Proteins. Proteins, maybe. And those guys now are behaving together in such a way that you have to kind of, in a very real way, balance that 2v2 match as if these are two separate races. Double the Zerg and double the production and this weird combination of two things over there. And then throw in another wrench into the tires when you go and add Zerg to Terran or Turg, right?
Yes, Turg would work.
Now you have a combination that changes the balance again, and it's. I'm sure it's not infinite, but all those combinations add up to be many, many different kinds of possibilities, and that even leads out 3v3 and 4v4 and 3v2 plus 1 AI. I mean, there's all this stuff that comes into the mix, and so I like that they look at this from a start from the 1v1, make that count for everything. And then branch out and then deal with the other stuff as you have to get to it.
Yeah, I think, I mean, to draw a Warcraft comparison for a minute, if you look at the difference between arenas and PvE, it's very much that same thing. You know, balancing classes 1v1 versus balancing them in arena, balancing them in battleground. They're all different, but they're looking at what they say is the core of the game, which is the 1v1. I don't think you're going to see 2v2 or 3v3 or beyond ever be truly balanced, because there's just so many combinations and you can't, you know, you can't say, okay, the Zerg have to be good early on against Protoss and against Terran, or what Protoss and Terran combined can send at them. I just don't think there's any logical way to really get to that point.
Yeah. So anyway, very few, just as a side note, very few Zerg showed up in the top 200 list in North America, which is causing a lot of this. People are like saying, "Bat, look at that support for our argument. Zerg are getting the shaft." So I don't know. The whole thing is just a little bit crazy. But you know, they go on to talk about how complex the Zerg is and how, you know, they really want to figure out ways to improve this. So I have high hopes, but at the same time, I'm doing some cool stuff with Zerg that other people aren't expecting, and that's still fun. It's not like they're not, you know, incredibly obviously underpowered. My guess is at a really high level of play on a 1v1 situation in competitive play, there are players who have real disadvantages as Zerg right now. And that does need to be addressed at some point.
And yeah, they're not saying that it's not that Zerg are not underpowered. I think they're kind of accepting that fact, but they're telling you that we're not to the point where it's balanced.
Seems like yesterday people were arguing in StarCraft 1 and in Brood War that Zerg were overpowered against everyone. And I just don't know how you get away from this argument. If you don't feel like you're winning, and to draw the, you know, the WoW comparison, nobody ever is 100% sure that the thing they like the most is the thing that is equal or strongest, or they always feel like they're getting left out or being nerfed or whatever.
Yeah, there's always the flavor of the month, and right now it's Terran. So
also worth mentioning this week is Dustin Browder did some talking, did an interview, and he is of course head designer of this game and is a all around totally cool dude. I like Dustin a lot. And he says this: creating Blizzard games is years of fighting and yelling rather than coding or creating. He calls it a, quote, a 3-week or longer holy war. And he was talking about the controversial decision to release the RTS in 3 titles. And it was made to get the game out faster. After all that arguing, Blizzard figured that it needed to release something, is basically how this all went down. And if it, you know, couldn't be the whole game, if the choice is wait a lot longer to get that whole game or let's get a third of it out now, they chose the third. I'm personally really glad they did, because I feel like I got a full huge experience in the single player and still got full multiplayer. And if this game was really that times 3, holy monkey turd, that's crazy. Yeah, dude, just imagine, just for a second, think about how big this game would be if we got one big full game. And I know there's people yelling at their iPods right now, I don't care, I want all 3 right now. Okay, fine. But you have to admit, that's a meaty campaign we played through.
Yeah, it's not like you didn't get your value for the money. It's not like they took something that was going to be a normal-sized game, split it into thirds, and sold it to you for $50 a piece. Mm. It's a massive game. And I know there's conspiracy theorists out now right now that are super excited that he's admitted this, because they're going to be like, see, they just did it for the money. Yeah. But in reality, they said, you know, we can't give you the same experience and not take 2 or 3 more years. Here's a full featured, awesome campaign with great, what I think, pretty good balanced multiplayer for a brand new game, where they've changed tons of units and added tons of abilities. And you're going to get this again 2 more times with this amazingly epic Zerg campaign and a great Protoss campaign. I mean, it's a win-win for everybody. I know a lot of people are upset, but let's really look at it long-term. You're talking about $50 now, $50 in another 2 years, and $50 4 years down the road. Is it really that bad?
Yeah, I think it's also important to consider that a lot of people, the initial cry of angst in the community at first was, well, they're just trying to milk us 3 times. They're trying to get money 3 different times, and that's the sole motivation behind any of this. And I think they forget this was a huge undertaking. They've gotten way more game than they planned on having, and to cut it in thirds makes sense. He goes on to say, quote, we wanted to get the product into consumers' hands sometime before the end of the decade. He says even that we didn't quite make, but it was still sooner. And I agree. I mean, yeah, they didn't get it. You know, if they'd have come to us and said, you know what, I know we announced this thing in 07 and I know everyone's really excited about it, but we're going to need another 3 years to do this, I would have been really sad. I mean,
yeah, it's been a long time. And I know people are arguing that it's, you know, it's essentially the same game, but it's not. They basically tell you, we've built this from the ground up again. Yes, there's some units that are similar, but I'm happy with it. I don't understand the angst. I know there's some, and I can see why people would see that way. But after they've played the game, I don't think that is the case as much anymore.
Well, he specifically answers concerns about that. He says, you know, many have thrown him these concerns about how closely the second game, StarCraft 2, resembles the first game, StarCraft 1 and Brood War, suggesting that it adapts more RTS styles that have been coming from competitors, different innovations. I would point to maybe Relic games with what they're doing and stuff with squad tactics and all that. And he comes back with this. And they're essentially the question being, well, wouldn't that have made your game more successful? And he says, I haven't really seen another gameplay experience that has attracted millions of players with hundreds of thousands of people playing online, which seemed a little snippy, but maybe, you know, maybe he's feeling snippy. Goes on to say, I have not seen anyone else be successful by removing economy. I have not seen other RTSs be successful by removing micro. And you know what? That boils it down for me. I feel comfortable in saying that StarCraft's strengths are in its basic core model, and to change that is a dangerous proposition. And we talked about on the show before how Command and Conquer, which should have long been the other hard-to-beat RTS out there, lost its way multiple times, had a few comebacks, but lost its way again here recently with 4, because they keep trying to mess with the core. And the core really, really, you know, it needs to say, does it tempt you to be lazy and not innovate? I guess, I suppose. But in this case, this is what they did. They said, all right, well, the core works, so we're not changing that. We're going to introduce a bunch of units, much more fun stuff to do. But where we're going to innovate is this damn single player. And they've said it over and over again. And you can't argue they didn't. It's an amazing experience, and it's beyond any other RTS I've played.
Yeah, like we talked about before, they do have the advantage of the fact that their game lasted 12 odd years.
Yeah.
And not a lot of other games can say that, but it's hard not to chase features. It's hard to say, hey, here's the same game with shinier graphics. Blizzard is a unique company in that they can do that, but they didn't do it every 2 or 3 years like they did with Command & Conquer. They took their time. They said, okay, now we feel it's a good time to redo this game and bring you a new, better StarCraft experience. And I think they accomplished that.
Yeah, I think so too. He finishes out this interview talking about upcoming updates and patches to Battle.net in specific. Says there's no timeline yet for the user paid maps program that we keep talking about on the show, but Blizzard is working on more art for modders and updates for our fans to get more value out of Battle.net, they say. As for what updates will be in the second retail title, Heart of the Swarm, Browder seems to hint that Blizzard just hasn't honestly decided yet. My guess is they've got a number of units to choose from. They may include some, may not include others. I bet they do a public beta of the Swarm expansion, which will be a strange thing for them. But then again, you know, a beta for StarCraft 2 was a strange thing as compared to StarCraft 1. So I don't think that's out of the question. I think we'll see a lot of that stuff sooner than later. And I'll bet you a couple weeks in BlizzCon, we'll hear more about what will be in Swarm.
Yeah, because there's not a lot. I mean, they're going to have to talk about Diablo 3, obviously, but I really think you're going to see more StarCraft than people are expecting with the game just coming out. I know some people are concerned that there's not going to be a whole lot there, but I think they're going to release some details. There's going to be a StarCraft panel, and I'm sure at that panel they're going to give us a preview at least of what they have in mind for the new units for multiplayer.
Yep, I'm excited about it. It's going to be cool. StarCraft 2, baby. Rocking the joint. all right, well, that's it for just a couple news items I thought were of interest. Hearing from people at Blizzard is always interesting. And with all this hullabaloo about finally we get a release date for Cataclysm for WoW players and their guild announcement and all this other stuff going on, it is nice to see droplets of StarCraft news coming out of the sky, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's a rare thing for this game. So.
And now it's time for this.
The map of the week.
All right, like we often do on this show, and always do is what I should say, we like to look at a map, and something you and I have noticed, there aren't a lot of just pure maps being made. You know, that's a weird thing. I thought we would see, here's what I honestly thought. When all this modding was announced, I thought, all right, here's what we're going to see. Tons and tons and tons of custom maps, and then there'll be a fair amount of like tower defense and some other little mods that are super easy to do and Dota clones and whatever. And then later we'd see a bunch of the really complicated kind of wicked cool mods. But the lion's share of this stuff would be maps, just regular old published maps. And we're not seeing very many of those, at least not very many that are getting played.
Yeah, there's some out there, but from what I've seen, it's like a small variation of something else or something that has some sort of mod built into it. In StarCraft 1, especially early on, it was all about just maps, and maybe it was the limitations of the system at the time, but that's really what I think we were both hoping for, is like all these things that implement, you know, little tricks here, there, different choke points, things like that that could change your strategy of how you play the game, but it seems like those are few and far between.
Yeah, it's weird. I can tell you this. I will promise you this, dear listener. if you guys have suggestions about custom maps that you're playing, and I mean regular old, you know, good old fashioned maps with good strategy and choke points and all the stuff you look for in a good map, please share them. Who what's it called and who made it, so that we can track this stuff down in Battle.net, try it out for ourselves, and we'll review them on the show. So we're going to start relying a lot more on listeners for this, because, you know, us two sort of just hunting down this crap is not proving super fruitful at the moment. And again, I think it's because people just aren't focused on good old fashioned maps right now. They're just, they're all trying to be the next tower defense mod that everybody plays, and they're all hard at work at other stuff. And there's something I played I can't wait to talk to about. I'll talk to everybody about it at the end of Mod of the Moment this week, but there's some promising stuff on the horizon. But I, that's all great. I still want to start seeing some maps that we can play just like regular old StarCraft in.
But in the meantime, we're going to keep punishing you with tower defense.
That's right. Tower tournament from, we don't have an author name. I don't think you had one.
No, it was like some letters.
Yeah, it was Tower Tournament is the name. It also had this like cross symbol next to it, which I don't know why he did that either. Maybe he was trying to set himself apart. It is a tower defense map where you get points for attacking units that can't be killed. It's kind of weird. It's a score system. And Brian, describe your experience with it, because I had less than awesome time with this thing. But I don't want to taint our review before I hear what you thought.
Well, so basically what you're looking at is you got a map with a bunch of different compartments, and there is a worm that spawns some sort of Zerg unit at the beginning of it. So there might be a Zergling, there might be an Ultralisk, there's a few different ones, and they all take up a set amount of pathing space. Mm. You get a little Protoss drone, and that drone gets a set amount of minerals to build certain units. There's Hellions, there's cannons. There's a siege mode tank, and there's like a gravity vortex. So there's a few different things you can mess with. And you basically get this little maze, and you have to put obstacles in this maze and try to hit these units that it spawns as many times before they reach the end and die. So you can't kill them. It's just about hitting them. So you need strategic placement of certain weapons and things like that. And then you can test it. They give you some test units. It's an interesting concept, but in execution, it's kind of boring, because like on the first compartment, I was able to put up like a couple cannons and a few other things before I ran out of minerals, and it really didn't accomplish a whole lot. I hit it, the Zerglings run through, and that's it. You're not controlling these. You're not making them attack. You're just hitting a button, and I know this is a big pet peeve of yours, and then you just sit and watch.
Right. Not a fan. That's my problem with this and other maps like it. It's an interesting twist, you know. I mean, on paper, this sounds like, hey, this looks like something new. But in the end, it's still kind of that thing where you just sort of let it happen. I wish, you know what? I shouldn't say this because I haven't specifically looked, and maybe somebody's already done it, because I played Pac-Man in this game and that kind of blew my mind. So maybe it's already out there, but somebody's got to be doing like a Plants vs. Zombies mod. Hell, we know Blizzard's doing one in the Cataclysm beta at the moment, or it'll be in Cataclysm as a quest thing, which is great. But I would really like to see somebody do that style of gameplay, which is there is sometimes a wait and see how you did thing happening in Plants vs. Zombies. But in PvZ, you get a sense all the time that you're kind of doing real-time stuff. And I can't stand tower defense games where it's set up stuff in a limited period of time and hope that you had enough, and oh shoot, I don't, and three things got through and I got to put up more. And in this particular case, you're not really even killing anything. You're just sort of, it's just a point grab.
Yeah, it's not really, the game isn't really set up for that kind of play style to me. It just seems boring. I mean, I can't, if I could even at least click on the units and control how they attack, that would at least give me something. But even like Hellions, they don't even move. They just sit there and shoot their flamethrower. And there's a couple cool little things, like the gravity field that can just basically get points for everything that hits it. A couple other things like that. But in the end, like, it just felt like some weird unfinished mini game. So it still does not sell me on tower defense.
Interesting. I forgot to tell you this. I tried the NVIDIA 3D thing since the patch, because they put that support in there.
Right.
Looks amazing. Looks really good. And I'm not a big 3D fan, folks. If you listen to any of my shows, you know that I freaking think it's stupid and sucks, and I hope it never happens. And I still don't like the idea of wearing glasses to have to do this. But their implementation's pretty awesome. I've had those glasses for probably a year and a half, and have used them for various games. They look really good in things like, Left 4 Dead and other stuff. But and WoW actually looks really good. But some of that stuff's being done by, like, the game itself doesn't have to have built-in support to have some of it look good and sort of work. But when they put support in, it looks a lot better. And Blizzard took the time to make this look really sharp. So for whatever it's worth, I just want to throw it out there. People haven't messed with that or not. The stereoscopic 3D effects using NVIDIA's... I already forgot the name of the stupid thing. Is it just called NVIDIA 3D? Oh, 3D Vision. 3D Vision, that's what it is.
Yep,
I'm looking at the glasses right here. They're staring at me. Looks really great on my PC, so I just want to throw that out there. I didn't have a real noticeable hit to performance at all. It's essentially rendering everything twice, so that's impressive. If you're into 3D then and you like StarCraft 2, then maybe this is for you. I don't know.
It'll make those tower defense maps that much more exciting.
Yeah, so, and that's what I was trying to do there, was make this map more exciting. But hey, folks, if you want to try it and you don't want to just trust our word, check it out. Tower Tournament, you can search for it by name. Although, again, the search function in the current Battle.net is so terrible. It's absolutely ridiculous. You can't filter stuff by name or by type. Or anything. The filters are super, super limited. So get on that Blizzard. We have a call about that soon here in a minute as well. I will play that in a minute. All right, where are we here? Well, let's move on to... Oh, by the way, you mentioned... I just want to make a quick comment about this. You mentioned that this game felt like a little bit of like a SimCity minigame.
Yes.
That got me to thinking, wouldn't it be cool if somebody went all out on that idea... but really implemented like a SimCity style or even like the Impressions game style, civilization building style thing where, you know, buildings would improve based on roads and access to sewage and police and, you know, like a full-blown top-down view city building game in the StarCraft universe could be really cool if it's done right.
Like, I think the units and with the buildings and everything are there, I think it's possible. I mean, it would be a pretty extensive mod, but I think that could be a lot of fun.
Think about it. Okay. I'm just throwing this out there. You got Terran Marines walking up and down streets. Or actually, just use those civilian models from the campaign. So they're walking up and down streets all the time. So you got a very busy-looking game, and you have your Terran buildings, and they range in size, and you can do some modding and stuff there to make them look cool or whatever. And if you want to have, you know... Here, maybe here's where you throw a little tower defense in that makes sense. Maybe some of the natural calamities are like Zerg invasions. So suddenly there's some random Zerg invasion where a big, you know, group of Hydralisks or something come out of nowhere, come burrowed up out of the ground and start blowing, you know, houses away on one of your streets. And your job was to make sure to put sentries on the street. Maybe those sentries are, I don't know, towers or something, and those towers can hit ground units or something. And just come up with, like, you know, all the tropes and the game style, you know, from SimCity and these other games are there. Just rip them off and make a mod. I'm not going to do this because this sounds like something to take a lot of time. But I'm just saying, I'd play that mod. We'd review it on the show. I think that'd be pretty cool.
And the scripting's all there. You've seen some of the stuff that you described similarly done in the campaign.
Sure.
So I think if you could find those and build them in to make some sort of just like randomized experience while you're building up the city, you've already have mineral collection that works like the money in SimCity. I think it could really work.
Yep, I agree. Moving on then to something a little bit, I don't know if it's more exciting, but it's something
it
else.
Much.
Yeah, it's something else.
Mod of the moment.
All right, that's obnoxious science vessel sound can only mean one thing. We're going to talk about Nexus Word Wars, the mod of the moment right here on, what is this show? The Creep. This is made Welcome. By Rodrigo, and it is another tug of war style map. However, you type words to kill enemies and earn animals, minerals and upgrades. Oh, and by the way, can I just say something real quick about minerals? All you people okay. emailing me complaining that I say crystals instead of minerals, screw all of you.
I was waiting for that because I saw those and I was like, well, let's just call them animals.
Yeah, I call them. I don't call them minerals because look at them. They're crystals. All right, that's what they are. They're represented in the game as great big crystals. So am I that guy when he plays chess? He'll occasionally refer to his knight as a horse, and when he's playing cards, he'll call his clubs clovers. Maybe I'm that guy, but I'm just saying it's not that big a deal. You know what I mean when I say crystals, and that is what you're refining. You're picking crystals, taking it back to the refinery thing or back to your command center and using it to make stuff. So whatever. I like crystals.
They will be crystals from now on. Since I can't say Z-lot anymore, we'll call these crystals.
Yeah, that's my Z-lot right there. Z-lot. Still getting beef for that from other people too.
I know. I'm sorry. It's I brought the credibility of the show down.
That's all right. Yeah. Nexus World War. I keep saying world. Nexus Word Wars. Literally, you are typing words to kill enemies. Now, I didn't get a chance to play this because every time I tried to do it, nobody was there to play. And it will not let you do a solo game or even with AI, obviously, because the AI doesn't know how to type. Right. But you did. So I'm really anxious to hear how this plays out, because I'll say this. I love StarCraft and I love word games. Like, I'm a big, you know, bookworm fan, and I love, like, Befuddled's a great game on the iPad. I love word games. So how does this stack up in the way of both a good word game but also a good StarCraft II mod?
Well, I think from the word game perspective, this takes me back to middle school and, like, typing class, you know, where you'd have, like, the balloons that pop up and you'd have to type to pop them and
Mavis Beacon teaches typing, sure.
Yes, yes. There you go. Like, this is very much like that. So what you have is you have your Nexus in the middle, and it's up to 6 players on the map, and people can spawn things such as cannons, ultralisks, things like that. And they're the basic units that you get from the game. So there's no real modifications to the units, which comes into play later. And as your opponents are earning minerals and gas, they're able to spawn these units to attack your Nexus. And you're supposed to defend and then, of course, attack and destroy theirs in order to win. So they will all have words and also sometimes math problems above their head. And you have to type those out in chat in order to kill them. And then when you kill them, that's how you gain your more resources as the game goes on.
All right. You got me so far. This sounds awesome.
And because the units are not modified, it allows you actually have that strategy. Now, again, you're not controlling the units, but hold on. Okay. But you do get some idea of what you need to do. So if somebody is coming at you with a bunch of zealots, per se, as much as zealots coming at you, then you can counter them with whatever you think is the best counter for them. So you have control in that manner.
Yeah.
So there's not micromanagement of the units, but you have that control. And then you can do things like drop nukes. You can get your ultralisks and go through and just tear through people, or you can, what they're referred to as spam, and just save up a bunch of points and then just send a bunch of rushes of, you know, say Zerglings or other small units at your opponent, and they can only type so fast, so then you try to overrun them that way. So there's a lot of different strategy to the game, and the added element of being able to type fast, killing the units faster. There's a lot of cool stuff. I saw some strategies where people would just amass a big blob, so it made it hard to read the words above their head. I don't know if that was intended, but it is a kind of cool way to go about it. So I love the game. Like, this is one of the few mods that we've had on the show that I'm really super excited about. Like, I will continue to play this. Yeah. My friends and I that were playing and went absolutely crazy on Skype yelling at each other, and I loved it.
You know what it sounds a bit like to me? Oh, by the way, one Z-lot costs 100 crystals. Just throwing that out there just to really make people mad. This reminds me of Typing of the Dead. Remember that old Sega game where the way you would kill zombies is typing?
Yep. That sounds exactly.
And you know what? That was a hell of a game. That was a hell of a game. So you've given me hope in this. This sounds like it'd be pretty cool. And I like the fact that somebody's thinking this way and doing something very, very different. You know, by throwing in this weird twist. So you play this with friends, I take it.
Yes.
And not strangers, which is probably why I couldn't find anybody.
Yeah, which is weird because for quite a while it was the top game on Battle.net. Like, it was one of the top maps on there, so that may have waned a little bit, but it's definitely, if you can get a group of people, you don't have to have all 6, you only really need one, but the more people you get, the more fun it is.
Very cool. Now, just a quick mention of a mod that I found while sort of hunting stuff down and trying to decide what I wanted to do. No pun intended on Hunter, because I found something called Zerg Hunter RPG, Betrayal, colon Betrayal. Not spelled out colon. That'd be a weird. I've had a colon betrayal before, but it wasn't pretty. What I'm trying to talk about is Zerg Hunter RPG colon Betrayal.
It's not working.
No, it isn't working. But anyway, the point is, full-blown RPG, tactical, you know, XP earning, over-the-head kind of RPG, tons of story, big old quest-giver dudes walking out into the land, getting teleported by a mothership and going out and, you know, kicking A and taking names, leveling up, getting new abilities and skills, multiplayer enabled, still beta, but man, this thing felt fleshed out. And I'm not really reviewing it here because I didn't get to have as much time in it as I think will be required for us to truly give this thing the, you know, the exposure we want, but very encouraged by this. This is really exciting to me. So I'm going to just, at least at the very least, for the, you know, in the meantime, go check it out. And there are people playing it, like tons of them playing this game. It's currently ranked number one in the map store or whatever the hell we're calling that. And I think Blizzard also has been featuring it. So it's getting a lot of exposure. Again, it's called Zerg Hunter RPG : Betrayal. And they've even got some cool intro art that kind of has some Rainer stuff in it. And just it's awesome. Even has cutscenes, little cutscenes with their own text and stuff. It's pretty rad.
Well, this is the type of thing we talked about in the very first episode that we were looking forward to seeing. And it's very good to know that it's already in the pipeline. Like, I wasn't expecting to see something that is as fleshed out as this sounds this early.
Yeah, very exciting. We will hopefully get to play with some of you soon in that little RPG. So go check it out.
You want a piece of me, boy?
Unit Spotlight.
Yeah! All right, Unit Spotlight, today we are talking about the Marauder. Scott Fletcher, explain.
The Marauder. Primarily a support unit, the remodeled heavyweight firebat suit packs quad K-12 Punisher grenade launchers that devastate enemy structures and vehicles from a distance. As the Dominion military began to reevaluate its systems, it determined that it was still geared to fight Terran versus Terran battles that were imagined pre-Zerg. There needed to be an increase in armor-shattering combat units with weapons capable of piercing through hardened Zerg carapaces. Is. The Marauder was the answer. These virtual walking tanks have given the Dominion infantry the hard-hitting, easy-to-produce support that had been missing on the front lines.
All right, so essentially, or at least sort of, a replacement for Firebats from the first game. Even though Firebats make a fairly distinguished appearance in the single-player campaign, these are really your main sort of, hey, here's your secondary unit after Marines guys. They have great range. They have great armor piercing abilities, dudes. And I'm in love with the Marauders. They do best and they're strongest against Thors, Roaches, and Stalkers. Or as B. Huff, international rapper star B. Huff would say, Stalkers. I'm just Stalkers. Kidding. It's not true. Weak against Marines, Zerglings, and Zealots, and their upgrades are concussive shells and stim packs, of course. They're awesome. Like, I use Marauders a ton when I'm going Terran. I probably have, you know, I think the mainstay of the Terran fight these days in any of the major strategies early on is lots and lots of Marines, but I love them as a backup unit. I use them throughout game, even in late game. I will always have a bunch of Marauders out there doing their business. How do you stand with these fine folks with their missile launchers and their whatnot?
Well, I mean, with the exception of air units, they pretty much can attack and withstand attacks from most units for a decent amount of time, which I love about them. But they're also part of, like, my favorite strategy for Terran. And I know some people are going to say it's cheese or it's overpowered, but the Marine Marauder Medivac, or a 3M bio ball, is they're kind of the centerpiece of that. And that, if you've ever played against Terran and just gotten destroyed by that, you understand how powerful that is.
Yeah, that's brutal, dude. That'll tear you a new corn shoot.
Colon betrayal.
That's right.
But they give you tons of flexibility. You know, the big thing, and I don't want to stray too far away from Marauders, but this is really how I see them mainly used in your average game. Because they're so good against heavily armored vehicles, they're great against Colossus, which not a lot of things from ground troop standpoint are. They give that flexibility to the 3M bio ball strategy, because if you need to go up against something that is more heavily armored, or you're going up against something that gives you a lot more you know, that is good against weaker ground units, they're the perfect thing. And if not, you roll them back a little bit more and use Marines. So you can't really beat them. They do have great range, so they are good against units that like your Stalkers that tend to sit a little bit further away that you can't get right up to them with your Marines. Overall, just a wonderful unit to use.
Yeah, and it's nice to have something that's good against Roaches, because right now Roaches are eating my lunch early game. So I will always pull out my Marauder. That sounds somewhat sexual, but I don't mean it to.
As long as he has two eyes.
Scott's pulling out his Marauder, everybody. Stand back. It's upgraded with concussive shells. Ba-boom.
Whoa.
So let's talk about... you talked about the MMM Bio Ball. I'm going to tell you another way I use it. I use them in mass in late game because everybody's gone to Thors at that point. And if I'm fighting Terran folk. And, dude... they're tearing those guys, no pun intended, they're tearing those guys up. They are seriously the Thor's worst nightmare in mass. And if you've got a guy with, you know, five or six Thors who thinks he's going to come, you know, tear your camp up, they've got another thing coming. If you just have a fair amount of Marauders and a few shots and they're down. So very, very good against a Thor attack. And I've got friends who, Brian Dunaway, who love to use Thors. I mean, he's Thor happy, and I love to counter that with a good Marauder set. So anyway, there's another way to use them. There are plenty of other things you can do, but yeah, medevacs and those guys and a bunch of Marines, trouble.
Yeah, and we'll talk about it more when we feature the medevacs, but the extra flexibility and mobility that you get from medevacs on Marauders, and the combination of using medevacs and Marauders with stim packs, there's so many tools that you get with that combination. Like, I can see why people would think they're overpowered, because you drop some Marauders in on someone's mineral line, you pop stim pack and heal them up and race in, they can rip through some stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty good. And I'll also just say this out there for the folks who think like me about video games, when they start thinking about the stuff they think is cool. Also one of the most badass units in the game. They just look cool. They have great sound effects. Their animations are awesome. Those missiles, I guess you can call them shells, look like they have serious impact. Stuff gets knocked back. They get knocked back from sort of the kick of the guns. Love that. Love the way that unit looks. I also like how they die.
Yeah, and when you build a unit that says it's got a whole lot of love and like some Barry White voice,
yeah,
you can't go wrong.
Well, dude, you can never go wrong with Barry White. Unless you were... Did he die? He died, right? No. The other guy did. The chef from South Park, he died. Different guy.
Same. Isaac Hayes.
Yeah, Isaac Hayes. Same genre, different guy. Anyway.
We didn't want to offend anybody.
I don't know. I don't know if Barry White's still around. I haven't checked. Anyway, moving on. We're going to talk this week once again about an achievement unlocked. I still don't have a bumper. That's all right. Our achievement unlocked this week is Training Day. And it's train 10 Marines in 320 seconds in a single melee game. And Brian, you've got to have a good recommendation for this, because I know you have this particular achievement.
Yeah, because I'm just lead like that. I have the easiest achievement in the game.
Yeah,
but I picked this one again because it's along that line of the one that we featured with the Zerglings last time that just helps you with those early game build strategies. So this one is probably the easiest of the three races. It's pretty quick. Basically, you're just racing to get your barracks up. So you're going to just leave You'll basically come out with the six SCVs that you normally start out with.
Right.
And you'll build up 150 minerals or crystals, if you're Scott, and drop your barracks.
Yeah.
Save up another 150 and drop your second one. Then you can go ahead and build another SCV. And at that point, you're really racing to get the Orbital Command Center. Now, what I've seen is that you can squeeze it in with without the Orbital Command Center, but since they increased the build time on the barracks, I like to get that Orbital Command Center so that way I can drop mules and I don't have to keep wasting minerals on SCVs for the rest of the build.
Yeah, I use mules like a freak, dude. They're my favorite booster technology in the game. Although, I mean, I have to say, I always forget what the Protoss one is called. What's it called?
Oh, the Chrono Boost?
Chrono Boost, that's it. Chrono Boost is very helpful as well, but I don't know. There's something about that Orbital Command Center's ability to poop out some mules that I really dig on that.
I know, and then if you're hardcore in sock folding, you'll be able to get like an extra 30 minerals.
Oh, I'm hardcore in sock folding.
I'm sure you are. That's what married life does too.
That's right, it does. You get really good at that. Anyway, very cool. Check it out. Achievement unlocked. Love these achievements. We're going to do definitely more of these. I was reminded the other day how great achievements are as a general gameplay rule these days. I guess we have Microsoft to thank for this, but the fact that everybody's sort of co-opted this idea into their games is great, and the fact that Blizzard has co-opted it into their flagship games is really great, because it's added just a whole new aspect to these games, and we will continue to feature them here. I guess that's it on that, right?
Good Lord. Fairly simple one.
I almost forgot. Talking about strategies real quick and achievements and stuff. We got a ton of email reminding me or letting me know that Day 9, Daily, 188 was the episode. But Day 9, if you know what Day 9 is, it is a very highly revered site / video series that talks about, and they publish this stuff on Blip TV, that talk about strategies in the game. And a lot of people really, really like these guys, and I do too. It's awesome. They just wanted me to know, and I had missed it, so it was nice of them to let me know. But that particular episode, 188, I don't know what the date was. It's been a little while now, right before the end of last month, did a full-on carrier strat and showed it as a viable strategy to winning hard-ass games in the upper levels. So I'm not just tooting my own horn here that carrier, because I keep bringing up carriers, but, you know, it's a respected way to play the game, damn it. And
we're going to prove it every single week.
So I just wanted to mainly let everybody in the chat room, the email room know that I appreciate you guys letting me know, because there was like tons of people going, hey, the carrier stuff. Don't forget the carriers, man. Anyway, that's that.
And you've opened yourself up to everyone asking when the live show is.
Uh-oh. Actually, you know what? I'm going to let people vote. I was going to bring that up today. I'm glad you said this. If you think you would like to watch this show, or I guess listen to it live while we record, and that may involve a little bit of pre-show, a little bit of post-show, something like that, nothing too long, but, you know, average stuff, let us know via email. If we get a strong enough response that you would like us to do that, then we'll do it. It's no skin off our nose. So we would be happy to record live. Unless a bunch of theory crafters come in there and we'll just boot you.
Tell us how horrible we are.
So we'll see how that goes. In the meantime, let's hear what you have to say.
Feedback.
All right, B-Huff, it's time to talk feedback.
It's amazing how appropriate the machine gun sound is for feedback that we get sometimes.
Love it. Love it. We got some calls first. Let's do these first. I have three of them, and then we'll get to emails. This one, all of this, by the way, comes to thecreeppodcast@gmail.com. Again, that is thecreeppodcast@gmail.com. First up, where is that damn map gallery?
Hey, Scott and Brian. Just recently bought StarCraft II after putting it off for a while because of the lack of LAN play option. So here's what I'm a little confused about. I'm not exactly sure where I heard this and misunderstood it, but wasn't SC2 supposed to have like a map gallery we could browse in-game and then use to download new maps and experience them? I was really excited to try out that Yabot thing. Come to find out I have to dig through folders, just like back in SC1. To install a new map. Am I missing something? Is there an easier way to do this? You guys have a good time now.
All right, man. We're having a good time. This is what we keep saying. You know, I really have a hard time with the current setup, and I'm sure it's just an issue of something had to give for release, and this was not a huge priority. But right now, it's just kind of jank. Doesn't really work that well. So I'm very hopeful that we'll see something soon at the very least. I'll bet you money they'll do a big BattleNet kind of update, preview, whatever panel at BlizzCon or during this StarCraft panels. And we're going to hear a lot more about what's coming soon or next. Certainly they showed a ton last year. So now that they're in full implementation, the thing is launched, there's got to be some stuff right around the corner. So have hope.
They're not going to miss the opportunity. I mean, this is a chance for them to make more revenue, to drive more traffic to the game. And because they're trying to model it after the Apple's App Store, I just don't see them missing out on that opportunity, because they've seen how successful that model is. And to be able to implement it into their game, it's something Blizzard's become renowned for. They take something that somebody does well and they've managed to somehow improve it and make it even better. So I'm looking forward to it. And I think, like you said, we'll hear something at BlizzCon about it. There's no way. They hyped it way too much.
Oh, yeah. We'll totally see it. So watch for that. Got another call about challenges.
Hi, Scott and Brian. This is Sancho, a listener from Germany. In your very first show, you read an email from a guy who was afraid of playing the multiplayer ladder because he felt not ready for it. So he asked for some tips or advices. I was surprised that none of you mentioned the challenges in the single-player part of the game. They are perfect for training all basic and advanced parts of the standard multiplayer game, like using hotkeys, micro and macro gameplay, rush defense, or the simple rock-paper-scissors-like unit mechanics of the game. So my advice for all people wanting to train their skills for multiplayer, play the challenges until you master all of them with at least silver or gold rank. Then you're definitely ready to start the ladder. What are your thoughts about it, Scott and Brian? Thanks, love the show. Bye.
Sancho, which is a strange name for a German, is absolutely right. He is totally right. Those challenges are awesome, and they are very, they're great at training. I would argue, however, that they can't cover everything, especially like, you know, if you're playing players online that have figured out something that nobody else is doing yet, and you want to be able to combat that, somebody could make a mod or a map or whatever to help you train for that. And I think that's still a totally valid, viable thing that we're going to see come out of players. But he's right. Those challenges are awesome. And they're really fun, too, I should add.
Yeah, I love the challenges. The one thing I would play devil's advocate on is I think it's easier to look back on it and say, wow, I learned a lot. But it's pretty daunting in the beginning, especially if you're completely new to the game, because there's nothing that really truly tells you how to win those challenges. It's not like it walks you through, pair this unit against this unit and this unit against that unit. You kind of have to figure that out as you go. So I would say if you're going to use the challenges for that, I would take a look at some of the walkthrough videos on YouTube, and that'll give you a better idea of some of the strategies you can adopt to beat those. And then that, I think, is better as a whole than just the challenges by themselves.
Yeah. What was that big tournament that just ended? Or did it just end? The big Korean one.
Oh, see, now you're going to set us up to get more emails.
I know. Whatever it was. I don't normally get all into that tournament Korean play stuff, but I watched a bunch of some of the bigger games or the bigger matches on YouTube. That's fun to do. Like, that's really, I could really get into that. And it was all the English called stuff, so I could understand it, of course. But that's kind of fun. The play-by-play can be, some of it depends on the announcers and the color dude and whatever. But once I kind of got past the idea that, oh, you know what, this is just sort of like sports anyway. I mean, it's quote unquote esports, and I had a ball with it. I really enjoyed that stuff. So I don't know. I got this wild hair that maybe one day you and I could color commentary some like community games and stuff. I don't know.
Oh God,
I'm just throwing it out there, dude.
No, that could be a lot of fun, because I don't, if you've ever watched the HD StarCraft videos on YouTube, that guy has a voice and a personality meant for that, and you just get so excited watching his replays.
Yeah.
I think that'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it'd be totally fun. But we'll see. No promises. Last call is about Hellions.
Hey, Creeps. Just want to share with you a quick cute thing that my kids do. You know the unit called the Hellion? They call them Heckians, because, of course, they're not allowed to swear.
Nice. That's funny, because most of my friends I play with, one time or another, I've heard somebody call them Helions. So, whatever.
But that was me.
Is that you?
It's always me. Whenever they're mispronounced, it's me.
Was there a Zealot driving a Helion?
There was. And they were gathering crystals.
I was going to say, picking up a bag of crystals somewhere. Crystal meth, yo. That's how B-Huff rolls. Okay, let's get to emails. We got some great emails. Thanks for these. And we got a bunch of them because we were so long between shows, we wanted to make sure to cover a bunch of stuff. I got this one. Says, hey, Creeps. This is from Nate. I love the music with the game, but I also like the jukebox on the ship. Do you know where someone could get that on CD or download? Well, let me tell you, Nate, since I have a digital version of the collector's edition, and that means it didn't come with everything. It's just sort of digital copy version. I got my pet for Warcraft and all that kind of stuff, but you don't get like the DVD and some of the other stuff. Did you get the collector's edition?
Yeah, I did.
Did it come with that extra stuff, like that version of Sweet Home Alabama and all that crap?
You know, I'm going to hear it. It's horrible. I haven't even taken it out of the box yet. That's how horrible it is. From what I remember, I think it's just the in-game music. I don't know if the jukebox stuff is on there.
I'm pretty sure it isn't, but I wanted to check with you. And the reason I'm pretty sure it isn't is I hunted all over the place and I can't find any reference to it.
Right. And that's what I was thinking. And based on the number of tracks I remember them advertising, it doesn't seem like there's enough room for all that stuff on there.
Yeah. So I'm pretty sure. Oh, sorry. Somebody just texted me and I turned it off. There's a couple of people on forums asking about it, and there's somebody who's actually extracted it. I'm not necessarily going to point you in that direction because that seems like piracy a little bit. or is actually piracy. But some people have done that. I don't know how that works in this game. I know how it used to work in the old game, and certainly I extracted some sound effects so I could use them in the intro and stuff. So it can be done, and certainly those files are in there. So you may want to hunt around and see if there's anything you'd want to do there. And I know there's some torrents flowing around and stuff. But as far as it being officially available from Blizzard that you can support and buy or whatever, or buy in one of the editions, it is not there.
My guess would be there's some licensing issues because there's some covers involved, and they probably didn't want to pay for the rights to sell the CD in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, and as covers, like the Sweet Home Alabama cover is kind of bad. So yeah, it's funny because it's in there, and it's, you know, redneck trucker stuff, and it's great. I like that, but it's not really, I mean, on its own, it's not that great. It's kind of just,
no.
It's like whatever.
It's a bit of flavor, but it's not really something I want to jam out to in the car.
Thanks for your email, Nate. Got another one from Kevin who says, "Hey, creeps." See, these guys got it going on with the creeps. They get it. "I'm trying to get as many achievements as possible. For the custom game achievements, there's a whole bunch for winning custom games versus medium AI opponents, but I never seem to get credit for these. If I go to the single player and then press play versus AI, am I not playing a custom game? I've certainly won more than 10 solo games versus the medium AI, but these don't seem to count. What should I be doing? Thanks, Kevin." Well, that dog is awesome, dude.
That is, my dog already has the answer.
Speak up and tell us, dog.
She is talking to us.
You know what? I've not done a single one of these versus AI achievements yet. Because most of the time when there's AI in my games, it's because we're adding a couple in a multiplayer match where we want to just have some distracting stuff or whatever. So my understanding, though, is you're doing it correctly.
Yes, there's one major thing, and I did this, and this is what keeps you from getting that achievement.
All right.
The big difference is you have to change the game type to melee.
Oh.
If the game type does not say melee and it still says custom, you will not get the achievement. Oh. So you're doing everything right, but when you set everything and you're picking your opponents, make sure you change it to melee, then you'll get the achievement.
Well, and you know why that is. I mean, if you go to custom, could mean anything. Could mean mods, could mean weird code, could mean scripting, could mean tons of things that make the game suddenly not a true achievement earner.
Exactly.
And so it's the same reason that while you're in multiplayer, or excuse me, while you're in single player, there are cheats, like the good old days with cheats in StarCraft. But the minute you do one, all the achievements shut off. Just boop, right. No more achievements. So double check that. If you're hitting melee, you're good. That's great. Great advice. Thanks, Kevin, for your email. Got one from Mike Z, another rapper, international rapper star from Las
We're
Vegas.
We're touring together.
Yeah, are you? Okay. He's from Las Vegas, Nevada. He says, "I'm a bit older than many gamers, 35. I don't, that's not true. The medium age for gamers now is like 28 to 40.
Yeah, it's because we're growing up. We were all gamers during the Nintendo age back in the day, and we're just getting old.
To say he's older than many gamers, I do not think that's true. I'll bet you're right in the middle of the road, dude. Anyway, I'm a bit normal, 35. And StarCraft II is my first RTS. Since I'm so new to the genre, I find it hard to dive into multiplayer, but I've decided to give it a try, doing about a dozen practice maps before joining league play. Frustrated by a 0-3 start in my placement matches, or my first placement matches, I was paired with a jerk who wanted to constantly insult me and call me vile names." Maybe that's why he thinks he's older. Because, you run into those. "Anyway, I considered just leaving, but since I'm playing for score now, I stuck it out. After I withstood his initial Zergling rush and destroyed his first expansion, the taunting stopped. 30 minutes of blissful silence later, I was victorious. Hope shy noobs like me can find some inspiration from my experience." Or others can, I guess. "Love the show. Mike Z." Dude, I had to read that email because that is the ticket right there. What you went through, there are times in this game where you think you're getting crushed. It is so mental game. And you just don't know because Fog of War and that guy was a jerk. And as far as you know, he's got a million dudes at your doorstep. And that initial attack really scared you. But in the end, you stick it out. You go with what you know. And you try real hard, and oftentimes you find out that they are all talk and smoke, and that's it.
And a lot of times they are, because I promise you, the people who are really, truly good at this game don't need to tell you.
No, they don't care. They just want to complain at us. Just kidding. I'm making it sound like it worse than it is. We're not getting a lot of complaints. Everything's fine. We're mostly kidding.
It's just the one or two that we get make us want to,
It's all good. Good or bad, keep the feedback coming. Got another email from Kenny. Says, "Hey folks," that's not creeps, what the crap, I shouldn't even read this, just kidding. He says, "I'm the guy who made the map and mod the Hungry Hungry Baneling under the gamer tag Johnny Floyd. And after seeing it back in the ratings on Battle.net this week, I decided to go see what sort of feedback it was getting online and found y'all's podcast talking about it. Just wanted to say glad y'all liked it and thanks for talking about it on the show. So apparently we boosted the popularity there a little bit. I appreciate the feedback, and let's see, I've seen around the net, and I'm glad folks really appreciate it for what it is, a curious little idea that came to me over the summer, which I decided to implement and give folks something to do other than tower defense and tug-of-war maps to play online. Thank you for that. At the very least, that effort is appreciated. He goes on to say, given the success of the map, I might make a sequel down the road somewhere whenever they actually throw together that Blizzard Marketplace. Again, there you go. Anyway, he wants to do something new, maybe polish it a little bit, and said thanks for the publicity on the thing and likes the show. So thanks, Kenny. Love hearing back from these creators. If you're out there and you're creating something like Kenny and you want us to check it out, by all means, email us. What's our email again? It is the creeppodcast @gmail.com. I always forget the. I have to make sure to put that in there. Someone else took that, those jerks.
Yeah, and they're probably like, what is all this weird email we're getting saying how I'm horrible and I should be in the Copper League?
Right. Copper League, baby. Hey, Creepers. Last one comes to us from... Oh, no, it's not our last one. Second to last one. This comes to us from Fubsy. Says, I'm not sure if you've seen this yet, but last week, one of the most iconic StarCraft BW and StarCraft commentators, StarCraft 2 commentators, Day 9, issued a challenge out to his stream watchers. His challenge was to, in normal league mode, to build a carrier before expanding as Protoss. He wanted to show people that carrier rushing is absolutely viable strategy. So this is what I was sort of talking about earlier. Goes on to say, I know this guy's been catching a lot of flack recently about liking a carrier rush, and I thought he might like this, especially as it shows that carrier rushing is a true strategy, and they have a link to it so you can watch it. I know I kind of just reiterated what I said earlier. I kind of forgot to put this email in there, but it never hurts. So we'll have a link to it, and you can check it out for yourselves. Thanks, Fubsy, for that. And sorry, I repeated the whole thing.
You just wanted to work carriers into the show.
One more time, right. Andrew Allen writes in, says, I overheard you on the last episode of The Creep talking about taking interest in the Zerg race. Excuse me. I have found a lot of success playing Zerg, but only after a lot of trial and error with build orders and strategery. I wanted to give you a Zerg build order that has improved my win ratio from 1 to 10 to 9 to 10. So pay attention, folks. Seems like the way to go. So here he goes. 8 pool, at 10 overlord, at 11 extractor, 3 units as soon as it finishes morphing. I hope everyone's writing this down. 13 supply, you do queen. 16 extractor number 2, 3 units as soon as it finishes morphing on each, right? First extractor's already up at 11, so second extractor up at 16. 16 overlord, 17 lair, so there's your upgrade, 21 spire, 24 overlord, 24 overlord again, 26 mutalisk gone crazy. So if you've done this correctly, you'll have 5 to 6 mutalisks building at one time at the end of this strategy, which is huge at this stage of the game. You will tear people new corn shoots, as I said earlier. And he says it's a lot of fun to work with, so definitely wanted to make a mention of this. Thanks, Andrew Allen. If you have a cool strategy like Andrew's, feel free to send it in. The Creep Podcast @gmail.com. Sorry, go ahead.
I'm waiting for the creep part. I might give this a try, considering I'm not a Zerg player at all. We'll see if it can actually help me win a match.
Yeah, I have not done it yet, but I'm going to. It looks like fun. I'll have to, like you said, trial and error. That's my problem with these build orders. When I start seeing some cool ideas for initial build orders for Zerg, looking at this on paper and trying to do it in real time usually gets me killed. You know, like I'm just like, I'm too slow. But I will try to get my head around this one because this one sounds like fun.
I might even record it in Yabot and see if I can give it a try that way.
Dude, that'd be great. That'd be awesome. Yabot. All right. Well, as you can tell, we are at the end of another show, pretty much. We missed anything? Have I missed anything today? I don't think I have.
I think we got it all, including at least 2 mentions of carriers and a couple of mispronunciations.
That's right. And we also have another Fruid Dealer versus Hope Torture little tip coming at the end of the show. So listen for that. And we love these cool segments people are sending in, so you keep those coming as well. Don't forget to visit the website, thecreeppodcast.com, the email to send us feedback, your comments, recorded messages, and otherwise is thecreeppodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/thecreeppodcast. And of course, you can follow Brian and I on Twitter. I'm at twitter.com/extralife, and Brian, yo, B Huff, can be found at twitter.com/B_Huff. That's H-O-U-G-H. And does your dog have a Twitter? We put that out here too.
No, my dog needs a Twitter. I think my dog is, they're going to be a regular fixture on the show for the next couple of weeks.
So love it. Love it, love it. Well, I'm glad you're all moved in and that things are settling down for you a little bit. We can't wait to bring you yet another show next week. Until then, for me and for Brian and for all of you, take it easy and we'll see you then.
And the dogs say woof.
Good morning, and welcome to another replay of the week from Fubsy Gamer.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Play of the Week. This week's play comes to us from the final round of the GSL tournament, the biggest tournament in StarCraft's history. The final match is a best of seven between Fruit Dealer, a Zerg player, and Hope Torturer Terran. This series is, without a doubt, one of the best StarCraft II series that I have ever seen, and I highly recommend that everyone go and check it out as soon as they can. One great play that I want to point out happened in Game 5 on Scrap Station. On this map, Hope Torture opened up with a proxy barracks and started pumping out Reapers. Fruit Dealer holds off the initial attack and then starts to push out with 6 Zerglings for a counterattack. While doing so, Hope Torture comes up behind the Zerglings with 2 Reapers and starts sniping them away. When the Zerglings get to the Zelnaga Watchtower in the center of the map and enter into the smoke that blocks vision, instead of just running right through, they instead wait right on the edge of the smoke, knowing the Reapers must enter the smoke to continue giving chase. As soon as the Reapers enter the smoke, the Zerglings are right there to get the perfect surround on them, take them out, then continue on for their counterattack. This move, as simple as it may seem, might have won the game for Fruit Dealer, because he was able to completely stop his opponent's push and make a counterattack of his own before his opponent was ready to defend. All because of a little bit of micro with some Zerglings against some Reapers. In the higher levels of play, this kind of micro, especially in the early game, can determine the winner or loser of a match, even if the match then continues on for the next 10 minutes. So remember, the next time you're microing, you might be able to decide the outcome of your game right then and there.
Anyways, thanks for listening, have a great day, and we'll catch you next time.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.